Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Inspired Perspectives with your host, Paulette Hubbard. And today we'll be talking about where life is a choice and perception is everything. I'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. And today on Inspired Perspectives, we will be discussing bipolar disorder. And I'd like to welcome my guest, Melissa. Melissa, are you there? Hello? Melissa, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I'd just like to thank you and welcome you for coming on. Thank you and welcome you for being on the show, where today we're going to be discussing bipolar disorder, and I think it's so important, and I just want to start off by saying that it's so important that we get out there and we get the word out and start educating not just society but our community in particular, because one of the mental health disorders that goes unannounced and misdiagnosed and underdiagnosed so often, and unfortunately it causes so many different problems within the family, and the family doesn't understand. I want to read a little bit of some stats before we really get into the discussing the disorder and the signs and symptoms, because we're going to cover all of that today on the show, as well as Melissa telling her story about what she's been through with caring for family members that are struggling with the disorder, and we'll be talking about all of that today. But an estimated 2.3 million Americans have bipolar disorder. It's also known as manic depressive illness. A person with bipolar can go from feeling very, very high, called mania, to feeling very, very low, which is depression. With proper treatment, people can control these mood swings and lead fulfilling lives. But unfortunately, like I said before in opening the show, it goes misdiagnosed so very often, and it's so prevalent within the African-American community. And several factors that contribute to African-Americans not receiving help for bipolar disorder and other mental health issues are a general mistrust of health care professionals. And a lot of it is based on historical things that have happened, higher than average institutionalization of African American within with mental illnesses and previous mistreatments, and things such as the Tuskegee syphilis study. It is a prime example, which has caused a lot of mistrust in the community. Cultural barriers also, because a lot of the doctors don't understand our culture, and it's so very important when you're working with individuals to understand where they're coming from and not expect for them to come to you. Reliance on family and religious communities rather than mental health professionals. And please, let me put this out there. Don't get me wrong. If church works for you, if your religious community works for you, then I'd say go for it. But if that's not working, sometimes that's just not enough. And that's where we miss it when we don't seek mental health treatment. A tendency to talk about physical problems also, because instead of discussing mental health systems, or we try to mask the systems with substance abuse, which is another prevalent problem in our community, with our other health conditions. Socioeconomic factors can also limit access to medical and mental health care. About 25% of African Americans don't have health insurance, so they can't seek the treatment they have, or they don't have consistent treatment, quality treatment, because of lack of insurance. Also, just a continued misunderstanding and stigma about mental health illness, which is where I want to bring you in, Melissa, because we've talked about this so often, people not understanding what's going on. Even some of your family that's suffering with a disease, some of the other family members don't understand it. You've made comments that they think it's fake, or, you know, they're just being manipulative, or whatever the case may be. But I want to invite you to talk about what your family and how you deal with the, how you help them deal with the illness, and just what all is involved in taking care of them.
Well, it can be tough at times. You know, my mother suffers from bipolar manic depression. My sister suffers from both bipolar and schizophrenia. I think the part when they're up on their highs and there's a lot of understanding, that's where the confusion comes in. So when they hit the lows, the family is like, well, you were just okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the confusion and the misunderstanding comes in with the disease. So many of the family members think that they're faking it and that they have control over their behavior.
Instead of understanding that this, and there are actually studies have actually been able to show, scientists have been able to show that there is an actual chemical imbalance going on in the brain, and the longer it goes, the worse it gets, and the unfortunate thing that we don't realize is that it can be treated and managed with medication, which is another study shows that we don't take our medication, even when it's prescribed, we don't take our medication.
Exactly, and I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, that, you know, historically we have never trusted the medical profession due to a lot of things that's happened over time. And I think that's one of the problems, because instead of both of them being a part of their treatment plan and, you know, saying, well, you know, discussing the different medications that's available, they always reject it. So it always leads to me petitioning them into the hospital, taking them to court, and forcing them to be treated.
So what kind of, how did you, let me start from the beginning, how did you, how were they initially diagnosed? Were they having problems? Did they recognize it? How did that actually occur?
Both of them were, well, my mother, it was a suicide attempt. My sister, depression. It just started out, what they thought was just simple depression. And, it's been years now. Both of them have at least, the bipolar disorder has only been diagnosed maybe about 12 years, but both of them have been suffering for years.
Wow. And that's so interesting, because what one of the studies that I was reading actually talks about that
right.
Bipolar disorder is often misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, and
right.
A lot of times it's even confused with schizophrenia, because we'll talk about the symptoms in a minute, but because this schizophrenia and when a manic, when someone is in their manic state, they may even display symptoms of schizophrenia, so they get misdiagnosed and mistreated. So then it causes that vicious cycle of where the medication and the treatment isn't working, but they're not being prescribed the right medication. So it's
right.
So important to know what you're dealing with.
But if you're not a part of the treatment plan, then
exactly.
You really don't, you're not given proper feedback.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor is pretty at his wit's end. And I think at some point, because, you know, you have some patients that do go with their treatment plans and they live a life, a normal life having the disorder, and the doctors a lot of times get frustrated with the patients that don't even want to try.
You said a couple things that I want to address. One of the things that you said is that they're not involved with their treatment plan. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, from my personal experience, it's like once I go through the petition process and go through courts and get them in the hospital, then the courts have forced them to take this medication. Usually it's by injection.
Mm-hmm.
So they may spend 3 or 4 weeks in the hospital and they're on this medication. They're doing fine and everything. They come out and they have prescriptions, get them filled, and just don't take them. And they start saying, well, you know, just little things like this prescription made me gain weight. Instead of going back to the doctor and said, I don't like the fact that I don't have control over my weight with this particular medication. Is there something else that I can take that will have the same effect that won't cause me to gain weight? Or my sister was on a medication that made her sleep a lot during the day. So it prevented her from getting a job and doing things like that because she would just fall asleep at any time. Instead of going back and saying this is a side effect she was having, she just stopped taking it.
Mm-hmm. How can we go about educating? Because one of the things when doctors are prescribing medication is that it's a science, and it's not an exact science. And it also goes back to culture also, because Asians and African Americans metabolize a lot of the drugs a lot different, and they metabolize them a lot slower, so it takes longer for their system to adjust.
Exactly.
To it. So what would you suggest for individuals that are struggling with, the doctors are struggling with, finding the right combination of medication to help them with their disorder?
I think a lot has to do with family, friends, whatever. They need to have the support, first of all, and know that they're not being judged.
Mm-hmm.
They're not being judged because pretty much when it's a label, and they don't want to have this label.
Right.
A lot of times it's the personal acceptance. I'm not sick, I'm fine. And when they're on the medication and they're feeling better, I don't really need the medication. I was feeling fine anyway.
Right.
I really don't know how to answer. I've been dealing with this for so long, and I mean, every avenue. I wish we had more family support where we all would come together and support each one of them. And so they can see the love, that no matter whether they're sick or well, that we're going to show the love.
Well, that's one of the things that we're trying to do, is educate our community about understanding. And we're going to be covering a gamut of health issues in the next few weeks that are especially prevalent within our community, so that we can start to educate the public. What you mentioned also the court system, that you had to go through the court system. What happened there?
Well, you know, previously it was easier to go. You have to fill out a petition form than a court data set. You have to go in the petition. You have to let them know, the individual, all the things that they're doing. Now, if the individual is not a harm to themselves or not a harm to society, then the courts don't even want to, they're not going to grant a petition to hospitalize them. If you feel like they're a harm to themselves or a harm to someone else, then they'll grant you the petition, put them in the hospital, and they are forced to take medication by injection.
Okay.
Pretty much that's what it is. With these new privacy laws that has happened over the last few years, brings by another issue, because my sister, she suffers from schizophrenia and she suffers from the bipolar. Both diseases hit at the same time. These disorders, she was in the streets running off to the point that she got robbed, drug into a house, beat, whatever. I petitioned her, got to court. I had so many petitions on her, they didn't even send me to court. They just signed it.
Wow.
Put her into the hospital, and I couldn't get any information. I couldn't even talk to the doctor, talk to the social worker, or anybody to tell them what has worked in the past. They put her in a hospital she'd never been in before, because in her mind, when she's dealing with schizophrenia, everybody's against her.
Right.
They refused to talk to me. It was just a blessing that she finally gave in to treatment, and which allowed her to get better.
Wow. So is your sister doing better?
She's doing better. At this time, she's doing better. But this is not the first time that I've done this with her. I've probably done it every year for the last 8 years.
Wow. And how does your mother, because you also mentioned that your mother has bipolar disorder.
My mother's bipolar, and one of the things with the bipolar disorder is they're very manipulative. My mother has been in and out of the hospitals probably for the past 32 years. The first maybe 17 years, mm-hmm. she was not diagnosed with bipolar. It was just depression, and she was diagnosed with bipolar maybe 12 to 15 years. She is more conscious than my sister because my sister has personality issues, and my mother manipulates the system. She knows when to act right. She knows how to get off the hospital, like she got out today, and she was in on court order.
Oh, so your mother just got out of the hospital.
She just got off today. She's been in probably about 30 days. but she was in there 2 weeks prior to a court order. The court order didn't come in, and she should still be in there. But, you know, after spending the day with her, I know that the medication has not started working, and she didn't get, like, her new injection because she manipulated them and made them feel that she's okay.
How do you know the difference? Because I think that's going to be key in people understanding what
the disorder
is. Let
me tell you, it's time. It's time and knowing that person.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there will be a difference in the person as far as their personality, especially if you spend, I mean, this is my mother. She raised me. I know the type of person she's always been. And she wasn't a manipulative person.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the signs that you see when...
Where they may stop saying the things that they were saying initially, because sometimes there's, like, some paranoia there.
Mm-hmm.
So you may not hear much about the paranoia. A lot of times they'll keep telling you the stories over and over again. But if they think that the story they're telling is going to get them in the hospital or be forced to take medication, then they'll stop telling that story. So once the doctor stops hearing that story, they think, okay, well, this medication is working and they're getting better.
When they're actually manipulating.
They're actually manipulating. My mother is one that does not accept having bipolar. She only accepts major depression.
And what has she talked about or been able to articulate the difference in why she would accept one and not the other?
Well, you're dealing with several issues here. My mother's had a really hard life.
Mm-hmm.
She beat all the odds even coming from her life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's had a lot of issues to deal with, you know, through her parents, through her brothers and sisters, through our father. I mean, she's had a really rough life, you know, starting with me, having me at just before she turned 16 years old. I mean, she was raped when she got pregnant with me. So these are issues that she don't deal with. If she talked to you about it, you would never believe that, you would never see how bad it really was. She'll always show the positive light in everything that has happened, and she's had a tough life. And she even said today that she talked about some things that she's never talked about before.
So there is progress. There has been some progress.
There's some progress. She's coming over there. She's coming over a hill, but this has gone on so long of not dealing with the actual issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now take it. My mother is like, if you got a problem, or you need some help with something, she is the person to go to. Because she will rather work out your problem than deal with hers.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's just human nature. It's always easier to focus on others when we don't want to deal with our pain.
Right.
You know, it's so much easier.
Right.
Some of the other things, the stigma that goes within, you know, that often goes along or parallel with our community, is that they do feel isolated, and sometimes the frustration
exactly.
takes over because people don't understand what's going on and they're not being supported. Some of the things, I want to make sure that we talk about some of the basic signs and symptoms, because there may be listeners out there that don't even understand what this is about or what it is. And you talked about how your family doesn't believe it because one minute she's fine and the next minute she's going through a depression stage. And what that's termed and how that's termed in bipolar disorder is called rapid cycling.
Okay.
And because of the chemical imbalance, their brain is constantly doing abnormal shifts. And I don't want to make it sound abnormal, but it's doing abnormal shifts. And that's where the medication comes in. And like I said, the longer it goes untreated, the more severe the rapid cycling can become. Some of the things that you'll see with mania is they'll have excessive energy. They may go for 2 or 3 days at a time.
Right.
Awake, wide awake. You would actually, sometimes you even may mistake them for being on drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that,
they're just wired. They are restless. They'll have racing. You mentioned your mom telling the same stories over and over. You know, they'll have racing thoughts,
right.
Rapid talking, denial that anything is wrong is, you know, always happening.
Oh, yes.
Extremely happy. And sometimes, you know, and I want to say that with them because sometimes they don't understand it. Because
exactly.
When they're in that manic stage, they're so upbeat and happy and feeling good and life is wonderful. And sometimes the cycling happens so fast, it's like they don't get what's going on.
Right.
But when they're also in that manic stage, they get easily irritated. They have trouble sleeping.
Right.
They may have unrealistic beliefs in,
right.
in what they can do, poor judgment,
yes.
Just unusual behavior.
Oh,
yes. Increased sex drive happens a lot with a lot of them become really promiscuous, if I can put it that way,
right.
When they're in that manic stage. Substance abuse. And I want to touch on substance abuse real quick because a lot of times where we think they're just drinking or they're using to be drinking or using, a lot of times they're self-medicating because that's the only thing that they find that will give them some relief. And that's a lot, that goes on a lot with a lot of the mental health illnesses that we'll be talking about in future shows. Aggressive behavior can also happen, and paranoia.
Yes.
And
yes.
You mentioned the paranoia also,
right.
In the manic stage. And then it can literally go from one minute they're fine and upbeat to the next minute they have just down spiraled to where they may have a poor appetite, and now we're talking down spiral to depression,
right.
Where they may have poor appetite or they're
yes.
eating too much,
yes.
Trouble sleeping or not sleeping enough. Nervousness and worry, loss of interest, and withdrawal from others and activities. That feeling of hopelessness or sadness that won't go away when you're depressed. And we've all been depressed about something
right.
at some time or another. So just magnify that by, you know, take that to the 10th power for somebody that's suffering with depression. Lack of energy, worthlessness, or feeling guilty. You know, they can't, when they're in a depressive stage, they can't think straight. They can't concentrate. And they a lot of them do contemplate suicide. And
right.
unfortunately, a lot of they do end in suicide because they don't get the proper help they need.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them also experience chronic pain or other physical problems.
Yes, yes.
And increased risk-taking behavior. And what I mean by that is a reckless driving, increase in substance abuse, or just crazy behavior that they wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, leaving off the house in the middle of the night.
Yes, yes.
Hanging out in places they wouldn't normally hang out at. You've described all the symptoms, definitely. I've experienced each and every symptom that you've named with both of them.
Wow.
Each and every one. I think another thing is that maintaining their personal needs, bathing, changing clothes. Like my mother, she changes her clothes all the time. She constantly bathes when she's going down. My sister doesn't take care of her personal needs at all.
When she's down. And that's classic of depression, that the hygiene
right.
goes, they won't
completely.
Bathe.
Completely.
Yes. They won't bathe, they won't brush their teeth, comb their hair, all of that. And, you know, it just breaks my heart when I hear people saying, oh, they're just lazy, or, oh, they don't
no.
have any motivation. And just depression alone just goes, the signs and the symptoms are just totally missed.
Right, and one thing, too, that I've always noticed is that if whatever good relationships that they have prior to actually going down, those are the people they'll still be cordial to even in the sickness. But if you've had problems with them prior to going down, they'll be even madder,
mm-hmm.
and usually say things that they wouldn't normally say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they lose their friendships because most of my mother doesn't have any of her friends, and she was one of those people that, you know, she will feed anybody, give money to anybody, let anybody live with her. So she doesn't have any friends.
Because of the disorder.
Because
people
of
have just
not understanding the disorder, basically. People uh-huh. have just labeled her crazy and went on. Fortunately, some of the things that you were saying about sometimes people think they're on drugs, a lot of times the safety issue that my mother has had it when she starts mannequin and she's on those highs where she can't sleep and she's running the streets in the middle of the night, most people think she's on drugs. So they don't bother her. They think she's homeless or she's on drugs or something. So they don't bother her, and that's really what's kept her safe. My sister, on the other hand, she did pick up the drug addiction.
And so now she's struggling with that also.
When she's on her medication, she doesn't struggle with the drugs.
Okay.
It's not the same as a person that's, you know, a person that doesn't have this disorder and they get strung out on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a constant battle on the day-to-day thing.
Mm-hmm. Which goes back to my point that when they're using substance abuse and there's a mental health illness present, that they're self-medicating. They're trying to find relief.
Definitely.
As opposed to it being an addiction.
Right. Totally. I agree totally.
Melissa, I want to take a five-minute break, and then when we come back, though, I want you to answer the question about what you found most helpful as a caretaker. And helping to take care of your mother and your sister.
Okay.
What are the things that are most helpful? And if you were going to advise someone that was dealing with a loved one that had this disorder, what would be some of the pointers that you would give them? And I'll have you answer that when we come back in
okay.
about 5 minutes. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I miss you. insecurities, acceptance, and even self-esteem. You never felt good enough. You never felt pretty enough. But imagine God whispering in your ear, letting you know that everything that has happened is now.
Now, welcome back to Inspired Perspectives. Well, we have our guest today, Melissa. We're talking about bipolar disorder, the signs, the symptoms, and in a few minutes we're going to talk about what's next. What steps can we take to help, once someone is stabilized, how we can help them stay in recovery? Melissa, when we went on break, I asked you a question about if you were to advise someone as to how to help as a caregiver, what tips or advice would you give them in helping a loved one deal with bipolar disorder?
That was a mouthful, huh?
All that right. Was a big question.
I think the first thing is that you must be strong spiritually. I kind of look at my mother's relationship and mine as it's like the reverse roles. Mm-hmm. The same patience she would use for me as a teenager and going through teenage things are the same patience that I have to use with her going through her ups and downs. You can't take anything personal because sometimes your feelings do get hurt. No matter what you're doing or how hard you're trying, your feelings do get hurt. And you have to not take it personal. You have to constantly remind this person that they are loved and that what you're doing it so they can have a good life. Mm-hmm. I try not to use words like normal because I don't think she's abnormal. I just think she's dealing with something. I suggest, which is something that I've only recently started to do with her, is find some support groups. I didn't realize that there were support groups out there. There are support groups out there. People are starting to come out and speak about this disorder. Unfortunately, when I did attend one of the meetings, there were no African Americans.
Wow.
And it was kind of like a downer because I thought, well, here we have this organization, and I know how prevalent it is. In the community because I'm also an educator of adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I deal with this all the time. I think people have to realize, you know, the love that you have this person and for the person that you're caring for, you have to really, really embark on that and always remember that no matter what, you love this person. You can't make any judgments and you just have to deal with each situation as it comes. Is no plan, and I don't think there's no right or wrong answer. But for your own personal, mental, and emotional health, you really have to be spiritually balanced, or this could take a toll on you because it's a lot of work. But I love both of them. And I guess a few years back I made a choice. Do I just say forget it like everybody else and watch my mother and my sister die in the streets, or do I try to do something? And I told both of them that I love them so much that if it took me petitioning them every month and going to court every month to make sure that they're okay, then that is what I'll do.
Well, I just so commend you for that, sister, because not everybody is willing to step up to the plate, you know, and really show that they love the individual that they're talking about. So I just so commend you for that. And my thoughts and prayers are will always be with you. But and some of the things that I heard you say that are key in being a caregiver is that you need to be spiritually balanced.
Yep.
Know who you're connected to. That is so important because you, just you know because you're constantly giving out. And I love that you brought put that for, at the top of the list because you're constantly giving out and dealing with. And now that you're caretaking for two, the caretaker for two, I mean it can definitely be draining on you, mind, body, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have somewhere where you can go back and draw from. I heard patience was key to this.
Oh yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Don't take it personally. You know the things that some of the things that they may do because we went down the list of things that may happen that affect that will their behavior will affect family relationships or any relationship for that matter. And they really a lot of times they it's not that they intentionally do it like we talked about. It's because of this disorder.
Yes, definitely.
So don't take it personally.
Mm-hmm.
Support the individuals, and not just support them, but show them love even when they're going through their mania or their depression. Make sure that they know that they're loved. And get them involved in support groups.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, and again, it's so unfortunate that we're not willing yet to come to the table. I think, why do you think that they're not we're not willing as a community to come in and talk about those issues that are happening with
you
us?
Know, as I travel through the circles and I realize, I think sometimes people, you know, some of us are willing to accept it and say that this is, I have this disorder and everything, but I think it's the level they are in their lives. If they feel like they are successful and they have accomplished a lot of goals and they put themselves on a certain level, then no. Some people may be struggling to get to accomplish some of those goals. I find that people that are still struggling to accomplish their goals or, you know, maybe trying to go to school or trying to get a better job, things like that, then they'll talk about those things. But I think people that feel like, hey, I've already, you know, mastered my goals. You know, like for my mother, for instance, she beat a lot of the odds being such a young mother. She had a pretty successful life. Is professionally, you know, she did well. She raised four kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of us, besides my sister having a disorder, we all graduated from college and, you know, pretty
that
good parents
awesome.
And, you know what I'm saying? We all have a good work ethic, and we take care of our children. And, you know, she look at these as her successes.
Right. So, and she should.
And she says, well, you know, how could I have done all this if I had this disorder? You know, because, I mean, it's like it never interfered, you know, totally with her raising us. I know that I grew up with not a lot of affection. She wasn't very affectionate. But she was always honest, and she was always straight to the point. She never beat around the bush. You know,
I can see how it's, or I'm sure we all can see how it's difficult for her to accept that this is something that's going on. But one of the things that some people don't realize is that it can start in teen years, and it
mm-hmm.
may be on a mild form, and then it just, like I said, if it's not caught early and treated, then it tends to get worse, and it can emerge later on in life full blown, where it's causing all type of problems, even to the point that it can be life threatening. And one out of five people with bipolar disorder actually commit suicide, and that's one of the reasons that we're talking about this today.
Oh, yes.
is to educate the community so that they can not only be aware and understand a little bit better, but to also be aware of those signs and symptoms where somebody is really in trouble and may be contemplating suicide.
Exactly.
Some of the things, have you found anything other than the medication that has helped your mother and your sister with maintaining balance?
No.
Okay.
And I know you spoke earlier about, you know, church and
mm-hmm.
everything. And, you know, God knows that, you know, he's first in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother and my sister were both in the church. My mother was about to become a minister.
Wow.
When this disorder hit her.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, what happens now with them having such a strong spiritual belief prior to this, a lot of times my mother looks at things as God is punishing her.
Okay.
And, but I know that that is when she has kind of, you know, she's really going through something.
Do you think that that's part of the stigma that goes along with people not stepping up for help? Is that because of some of the beliefs that they're, this is punishment in some sort of way, that and they're getting what they're, they deserved, quote unquote, for whatever sins that they've committed?
You know what I do, especially when you have such a strong spiritual belief,
mm-hmm.
and people, I mean, you know, when people have a strong spiritual belief, they try to walk a really straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the things that God will forgive you for, you won't forgive yourself for.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I think if you make mistakes going down this path, that sometimes you think God is punishing you, but in reality you're punishing yourself. And, oh, yes, definitely. I think the both of them have made mistakes that they could not forgive themselves for. Because they had set the standard for what a saved and spiritual woman was supposed to be. And if
wow.
they went outside of that bracket, they deserve this to be happening. Yes, I definitely believe that that has something
wow.
to do with it.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because forgiveness is so key. And not just forgiving yourself, but forgiving other people. Because when
yes.
when we internalize, you know, hurts and pains, it turns into anger. And then, and a lot of times depression is repressed anger.
Oh, yes.
Where we're just not dealing with the issues and doing the things that we need to do to take care of ourselves mentally, then those mental illnesses come about.
Yes.
Some of the things that we've found as a therapist that I've found that have been helpful with helping individuals with dealing with mental illness is eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
It is so important that they eat a balanced diet. That's been key in helping some people manage things. The sleep schedule, try
okay.
to get them on a regular sleep schedule
okay.
regarding their sleep. Also, I've had a lot of clients do what we call a mood chart.
Okay.
And it's been invaluable, not just for the client, but for the doctors, to really help them. And it also helps with diagnosis and treatment, because what a mood chart does is it's like journaling. And they will journal when they're feeling, when they're feeling starting to feel, because they can usually tell you when that change is coming on.
Okay.
They can usually tell when they're getting ready to go into a depressive state or when they're going into a manic state. And if they just will start journaling or using their chart to just say, you know, I had a bad day today and this is what was happening, over time you'll actually be able to chart that and be able to tell when they're cycling.
Okay.
So that's very key, and it also will help to identify triggers, which leads to my next thing, stress. Stress is a huge trigger
for this disorder.
So helping them to learn stress management techniques, you know. And I tell this to women all the time anyway. It is we think we need to be everything to everybody.
Right.
And we never stop to take time for ourselves. So even if they learn to just take 15 or 20 minutes a day to just totally relax and take care of them and pay attention to their needs, then it would help. Exercise is also key in helping create that balance, that chemical balance in the brain. And a lot of us don't do a lot of that. And it doesn't have to be anything extreme. You know, just go for a walk around the block or whatever the case may be. Some have noticed that they have a huge difference in their moods and the stability of their moods and their energy level. Some of the key things to avoid, of course, is alcohol and drugs, smoking, caffeine, and negative people. I can't stress that enough. Just like we've been talking about for almost the last hour about not having support and people not believing in them, sometimes you have to step back from them because you don't need that additional. It just causes
exactly.
additional stress.
Exactly.
And then if they, you know, again, taking medication, if you can get them on a schedule, and this is not just you, Melissa, but I'm just talking to the listening audience, you know,
okay.
Get them on a schedule with their sleep and the exercise and regular eating habits. You want to reduce all of those type of stimulants, the caffeine, the sugar, all of those things that
that they crave.
Yeah, yeah, and it's hard. Look, I don't have that. It is hard. So I know.
I've been fucking all afternoon. You can't have that.
And I'm not struggling with bipolar disorder, and I know it's hard, you know.
Right.
So I really can understand and appreciate what they're going through when they're dealing with that. But it's so imperative, and if they can start to build those things, and what I recommend to clients is when we start looking at their diet and exercise and sleep habits and stress management and all of that, is not to try to take it all on at one time, because that causes more stress.
Right. We need you in Michigan.
Now, I love to travel, so...
It sounds so good coming from you.
Well, thank you. Well, I've been doing this for a while, and you know, but it is, and it's a step. You know, they didn't, and what I remind clients is that they didn't get there overnight,
okay.
So they're not going to fix this overnight.
Right.
You know, just like it took, you know, it was a gradual process, and a lot of times we don't realize it until we're there. It was a gradual process to get there. It's going to, you know, it's going to take steps and consistency to get back to, you know, what they would term as normalcy, and we all have our own definitions of what normal is. So, if they just start taking those baby steps and incorporating those things into their lifestyle, and it has to be a lifestyle change, they'll start to see the rapid cycling decrease and better management with what's going on. Also, with the mood journal, when they start to journal, and they'll be over time as they track it, when they start to see it coming on, then they can stop and look at, oh my God, at the times that I'm most stressed, that's when I go into this stage, this phase. Then they'll know to, you know, okay, I need to look at what I'm doing with my stress and how I'm managing it.
Right.
So that's why the charting or the journaling, however some people, depends on who you're talking to, how they term it, that's why that's so important. And even if they don't want to write it, I have some clients that don't like to write, you know, use a tape recorder. Whatever it would take to just keep a, and it doesn't have to be any long. You don't have to write 3 pages of a journal, but just jot down notes for that individual about what's going on with them when they start to feel a change coming on. Did that make sense?
Yes, it makes a great deal of sense. You know what? Also, that writing is another key factor to know when they're not balanced.
Mm-hmm.
I find that both of them, they write, and when you read what they're writing, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things doesn't make sense. They may be writing little parts of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It may be stories about their lives, but at different times, but it's all, like, bundled up. So that is, like, a key factor in when they're, you know, the chemical imbalance is really kicking in,
mm-hmm.
and they may be going down.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that they're writing a lot of things, and it just doesn't make sense.
And those are the times that, if you can catch it before they get into a full-blown stage, is to catch them and look at what's going on in their environment. Is there extra stress right now?
Okay.
Have they picked up, because I'm guilty of this, have they increased, you know, eat things that ain't good for them, you know,
right.
All of those things are... Those are the times to stop and help them look at, you know, what's different from the day that you were feeling more balanced. What's going on that,
right.
that what's changed?
Yeah, I think if you can get them to be a part of their treatment plan,
mm-hmm.
and really trust the person that's
mm-hmm.
treating them, then that is makes a big difference. My sister, she does well, but I'm starting to hear her say, I'm gaining weight. She's always been very small, and she really doesn't like to have weight on her.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something I've been talking to her about, is just really getting more involved in her treatment plan to see if it's the medication or is it just because she's not doing the things that she was doing.
Right. And some of the medications will do cause that side effect. So you're right on point with telling her to go back to her doctor and find out if there's another medication that would do this and have the same effect but without that side effect of a weight gain.
Okay.
Because it is a science, and if you're not talking to the doctor, how would he know?
Oh yeah, definitely.
What the side effects are. So that is very important to make sure you check.
But she's seeking therapy and she's doing the things that she needs. So one down, one to go.
Awesome. There you go. Awesome. And,
yeah.
And just, you know, continue to cheer them on and support them and let them know that they are loved. And they will definitely be able to live a very fulfilling lifestyle because this is a manageable disorder. It's just about being aware of it and what you need to do.
Right. I agree totally.
Well, Melissa, I want to thank you again so much for coming on the show and being willing to share some of your experiences and give some advice to how to help deal with this disorder. And for our listeners, if you think that some of these things sound familiar for yourself or for a loved one, do several things. One is go talk to your doctor, your general doctor, and he can either prescribe medication or he may even refer you. You can go to your local mental health facility, or you can call Mental Health America at 1-800-273-TALK. They will talk to you about what's going on and help you find someone in your area, make a referral that can help you get the treatment that you need. And once again, I want to thank my listeners for tuning in to Inspired Perspectives. And Melissa, I just want to thank you again. Do you have any last words or anything else that you'd like to say?
I'd like to say thank you for having me. Thank you for talking about this, you know, and just be supportive. Be supportive. Don't turn your back because they need you now more than ever before.
Thank you so much, Melissa. And once again, tune in with me on Friday evenings at 6:30, where over the next few weeks we will be discussing mental health issues, especially within the African-American community. Next week our show will include Dr. Bullock from Washington, D.C., and we will be discussing men and depression, and it's guaranteed to be an awesome show. Thank you, and God bless.